asking for help. It's just something we don't like to do.
We are developing courage and faith in God's ability to provide.
I think we do people a disservice if we don't give them the opportunity to do this.
If you're unable to ask people for money, what makes you think you're going to be able to ask people to repent of their sins and give their life to Christ?
Welcome to the Lutheran Church Planter, a podcast exploring the theology, philosophy, and practice of planting new Lutheran congregations. I'm your host, Andy Coyle, Church Planter, Director of Home Missions for the Association of Free Lutheran Congregations, joined by my co-host and fellow church planner, Matthew Ballman. Last week, we talked about finances, budgeting, kind of an episode that's part one on this whole big conversation that circles around money, kind of a thing you need as you seek to live life and operate a congregation. Churches that are 100 years old have questions about money, and they're always thinking about budgeting. It's no different for a brand new church at all. So today we're going to be talking about how do you raise partners? It's not just purely a financial thing, but we're really wanting to raise people, raise partners, raise people that are excited about the ministry and all the things that are included in that. So we're going to kind of dive into some nitty gritty with that and just give basically a plan or a strategy on how to do this. I think oftentimes people don't want to talk about this. There's a built-in negativity to the idea of raising money, to traveling around and talking about money. People don't want to do it. Whether that's a misunderstanding of the theology of money or maybe a worldly understanding that talking about money is bad, or maybe it's just fear for doing this or asking for help. It's just something we don't like to do. We're going to try to make a case today for why this is actually a great thing and a valuable practice and really a great strategy for church planners or missionaries. This is the same thing for missionaries too, on why we want to be raising money. And so before we get into some of the steps, we're just going to maybe answer two kind of big questions. The first is, why is partner raising a blessing for missionaries or pastors? And then why is partner raising a blessing for the people that you're actually speaking to? So Matt, let's start with that first question. Why is partner raising a blessing for the actual planter or missionary who's going out doing this?
It is a huge blessing. And I know it can be a scary thing having gone through this before, and you've gone through this before. So we do speak from experience, but there is great, great blessing. A couple of the ones, as we were talking about this ahead of time, we kind of narrowed it down to four. The first one being that this process is forcing you to get clarity and articulation on what God is actually calling you to. What is this church going to be about? Why are you wanting to even begin this new mission outreach? Like, what's the point of it all? And having to be forced to that clarity will really help you when it comes to down the road when you actually start the church. Because if you can't do it to people who are friendly towards you, who love you, who want to see you succeed, man, it's going to be so much harder mm-hmm. when you get into the mission field with people who aren't believers, right? Or who aren't committed to a local church, who don't agree with you on everything, to share the vision of what God is doing in and through that church plant. So that's very practical of just kind of forcing you to that, you know, what is it about? What is your purpose, your call, your ministry? And then practicing articulating that. Mm-hmm. That's huge right there.
Yeah.
Another one is an opportunity to teach about the mission of God. Every opportunity that we have as church planters, as pastors, right? It's teaching, it's instructing, it's guiding. And to talk about what God is up to in the planting and expansion of his church and the funds that are needed for that work to go forward is an opportunity to help other people, our brothers and sisters in Christ and congregations, to expand their understanding of the mission of God. And that's what's really cool about whether you're a missionary or a church planter, you're not just going out to minister to people, right? That is part of it. But as you are going out, there's going to be an instructive, teaching, didactic kind of ministry to those mm-hmm. who are sending you out as well. So that's really huge. A third big blessing would be, this is one of the ways that we are developing courage and faith in God's ability to provide for his church, right? It's not our church, it's his church. And as we step out, it is an opportunity to develop that courage and that faith and that resilience and endurance that you are going to need on the mission field or, you know, in a church planting setting. One of the things that often is said kind of in the church planting world, that if you're unable to ask people for money, you know, what makes you think you're going to be able to ask people to repent of their sins and give their life to Christ? You know, and again, yes, it's God's work in all that. But the point, I think there's something to that point, is if we're afraid to do this, man, we're probably going to be afraid to share the good news of Jesus with people as well. So seeing this, what an opportunity to begin growing in that endurance, courage, perseverance in the ministry that God is calling us to. And if kind of a fourth final blessing is, not only does it, you know, teach that force, that clarity and articulation, a teaching opportunity, develop courage and endurance within the missionary or the planter. But the final thing is that it is a huge faith builder, and that as we share need and we see God's people respond to that, that can give so much encouragement to God's provision for this plant. And those are often those stepping stones. I mean, I can say for our journey, that was huge. Those first couple people that committed and saying, hey, mm-hmm. we're going to be praying for it. We're committing to praying. We're committing to giving, whether it be a big gift or a little gift. That was so formative for our faith in continuing to walk forward. So those are all just some of, we could come up with a lot more blessings to the actual planter in this partner raising. But there's more could be said, and I guess I would love for you to share. Those are the blessings to the planter. What would be some of the blessings to the people participating in that, partnering with that?
Yeah, I was just thinking as you were talking about that, if I could just maybe still be part of that first question. I think we do people a disservice if we don't give them the opportunity to do this, you know, whether it's a missionary or church planter. I know it's really easy to, and maybe we think we're helping them say, hey, we're just going to hire you and you're going to go do this and you don't have to worry about raising funds. I think that's really short-sighted. And for everything you talked about, what a gift to be able to go out. And I know that was for Monica and I too, as we raised support of just like, this was fun because it was the way to grow and the way to hone that message, that elevator pitch, you know, per se, and just to see how God provides. That's such a great exercise. But it's also really good to see then how this is good for the people you're talking to. You know, if all I'm thinking about is, oh, I got to go and ask them about money, I think we're really missing the point. Mm-hmm. We are trying to raise people. We're trying to raise partners for the ministry. And so I think, you know, there are a few things that we talked about before we got on air too, is just the first blessing is that you are raising someone that has a deep connection to your ministry. You are raising someone who's going to care about the ins and outs of the ministry, that are really passionate about seeing how God is going to build whatever that ministry is, right? So that personal deep connection to the ministry, that's huge. That you're also raising a friend, you know? You want that person to care about you personally, not just the ministry. And so when you see them at conferences, when you see them at different things, like they come up to you and they have a relationship with you, that's really important to foster the opposite of isolation, right? There's a community there. Obviously, prayer, the more they know and care about the ministry, the more they care about you and know you, it's going to increase prayer engagement, which is huge. And so, you know, as you send out your prayer emails and your updates, you actually are going to have people that are going to pray, which is important. And then finally, obviously, there's a money component, but I encourage you to see it this way too, is that you are allowing them to be part of the blessing and receiving the blessing of giving financially. So that just is a huge theology of money and the theology of stewardship and spiritual discipline and all these things and how God invites us to partner in ministry with our finances. And as people give financially and sacrificially, God blesses. And so we do, again, do a great disservice to people if we don't let them be part of that. And there's just countless examples in our lives and in the lives of people around us that can share about how God has blessed them exponentially because of their sacrificial giving, right? And so partner raising and for as a blessing for missionaries, and partner raising as a blessing for the people you speak of. It is a great, great thing. And that, I just encourage you as you think about the idea of raising money, that it is so much bigger than that. Okay, we could talk a lot more about that, but let's get into some practical things here and just get into the idea of some of the steps. Okay, there's a lot of good books out there. We're going to give you a couple of recommendations later. This isn't this secret thing. There's a lot of things that have been written about this. A lot of nonprofits have to do this. Churches have to do this. Missionaries, tons of resources. And so we're just going to share some, you know, aspects of those things, and maybe specifically as it relates to church planting. But Matt, take it away. Like, what is we thinking about raising steps, partner raising steps? Where do we start?
Well, yeah, we think you introduce this. Like, first we need to think, what is the goal here? And there are really two significant goals. You know, the first one is, it is raising partners, right? Yes, but how? Well, first and foremost in prayer, right? This is, fundraising always has to be, ultimately, it's this expression of our reliance upon God. How we talk about money, how we relate to money, both for the giver and for the person asking money. It is, that's what makes this such a powerful topic, because this, perhaps, almost more than anything else, strikes at what are we trusting in. So recognizing the number one thing is, we're asking for prayer partners. We need you to pray for this work, because God is the one doing providing, both for the money and for the souls and for opening and closing of doors. We need that. So we're the goal one, prayer. Goal two, yes, finances. Zig Ziglar has a saying, what is it? Money isn't the most important thing, but it's right up there next to oxygen. Right. And the idea being, for a church, like, yeah, you need money to you know, have a festival to get together and invite your neighbors to it. Right. I mean, you just need money for basic things. So it is one of those things that your planting can be much harder or a little bit easier, never easy, but a little bit easier by having a sufficiency of money in that. So all this kind of plugs into that. So you need to build a strategy. The first thing is, let's build a strategy of what we are going for. How many prayer partners would we like to have? And put a number on that, right? And maybe you get less, maybe you get way more, but what's a starting number? You know, are you like, oh, I'm content if I have 5 people praying for me. That's all that I need, right? Or, man, I want to have 100 people who are committing to pray for us once a week. You know, what is that actually? Your financial need. And we're going to focus in kind of on that, because that is, I think a lot of us get by default, it's easy to ask for prayer. It's harder to know how to ask for money. So I want to focus on that. Of build a strategy on how much you need. And that starts with your budget. In the last episode, we talked all about budget. A little of this will be recap, a little bit what will be new. When you're thinking about a church plant, what you need to do is look at, what do I need over in the first 5 years? That's usually kind of the runway we tend to talk about. That's kind of the common in the church planting world. How much are you going to need your first 5 years? And this number will be contingent upon where you're planting. It's going to be contingent upon how many people you have when you start planting, right? The cost of, you know, renting in that area, cost of living in that area. So these numbers are not set in stone. But just for the sake of kind of a working number for us, and this is very kind of maybe a median number, could be a little bit lower, could be a lot higher if you're in a more urban environment. I say over 5 years, you need to have $600,000. Okay, so roughly $120,000 a year. $120,000 a year. That's not astronomical. Maybe feels like a lot, but not. It's really not too bad. Okay, so for 5 years, as a new church plant, you know you need to have $600,000. Now that money is going to come from two different primary sources. It's going to come from external and internal. External and internal. And what you need to do when you're planning this is, you know, if you are doing a church plant, you may or may not be starting with people. If you were doing a parachute plant, you might be starting with 1, 2, no people. So you have no external, no internal money coming in at that point, or very little. You have your own personal tithe that you're tithing to it. Most of your money in year 1 and 2 is going to be coming from external sources. Okay. And so when you put together a spreadsheet, you need to say, here's how much we need every year. Here's our total goal. Here's how much we're projecting for our first 5 years. And that's going to be decreasing on your external and increasing on your internal. So here are some of the numbers we tend to say is, year 1, you need 100% of your money is coming from external sources. Year 2, 90% is coming from external. Year 3, 70% is coming from external. Year 4, 50%, and year 5, you know, maybe it's 0 by that point, could be 25%, But those percentages are then going to guide how much you need to raise from those sources. What would you add to that?
Yeah, it's really good. I think it's really a good distinction between the external and internal, and recognizing that one is going to increase, the other one is going to decrease. And I think you mentioned the contextual aspect. That's so important. So a person might hear those numbers and saying, wow, that's really low. Others might say, that's crazy high. And there's just so much about church planning and so many things we've talked about is case by case context, right? But I just think about, you know, the regular congregation in, you name it, Minnesota or North Dakota, you know, what their budget is per year. Like, these numbers aren't that astronomical. It's just, this is the cost of doing business when you're trying to create a congregation. So that's just the way it is. So where is, we talk about external income then, and we're going to be getting into this a little bit more, but there are multiple sources for external income. So we have four written down. If there's a mother church, you know, that's a one. So for example, if a congregation is going to, you know, birth the church, like I had that with Abiding, same with you, there is a certain level of income that comes from that parent church. That can be very contextual. Other congregations, that could be in your district, that could just be across our AFLC. It could be congregations that you know that are not connected to the AFLC. But again, it's a congregation as an external aspect. Individuals, friends, family, coworkers, all those types of things. Individuals, and of course, AFLC Home Mission. So really, we kind of have four categories of external income of where you're going to look to try to raise partners. That's the connection. These are partners to raise. Mother Church, other congregations, individuals, and then because you're part of the AFLC, AFLC Home Missions, right? And right now, our current practice, which could change, is that we have a 5-year grant that is a diminishing grant, just like we talked about diminishing external income, a diminishing grant of $150,000. And that's our current practice. That could change in a few years, but that's what we're doing right now to help a congregation get off its feet, to participate in that budget process. So that's external. So internal, Matt, talk about that. I know you did a lot of work on this as you were getting off the ground in San Antonio. How did you go about projecting internal income with your people?
Yeah, there's a couple different, there's no like perfect, you know, silver bullet way to figure this out. Because it does depend on, you know, who God draws and where they're at in their faith, how much money they make. You know, there's a lot of factors that play into that. So we as we were thinking about this, you know, so we had said, hey, this is how much we need every year. Here's what we need the first year. We know, you know, we're you know, say year two, 90% of that is still going to be external. What does that other 10% look like? What can we count on that other 10% to actually be? So there's kind of three things that we looked at, or I guess maybe two really. One is taking the average that a lot of studies have found that the average Christian in America ties $100 per month. Okay, so that's a very broad average. So a family of five, but they are going to tithe $500 a month, right? Family of two, $200 a month. Now, the reason that that is, you know, kind of a helpful number is actually it, I feel like it skews maybe a little bit low for more mature Christians, but again, it'd be better to kind of project a little bit low than higher. Another thing to go off of, and so we took that number and we looked at, well, what is that going to look like? Another one was we looked at giving units, and a giving unit is a household as opposed to $100 per a person, right? That's husband, wife, men, women, children type of thing. Giving units is household. And what you can look at with this is you can look at your median income in the target area, and then you can project, well, if median income is $100,000 and they tithe, say, 2% or 5%, probably not going to be 10%. You know, maybe that's going to be more your very mature, strong, lifelong Christians are going to be at that higher percentage, you know, or more maybe. But that 2-3% is probably a more realistic number. $100,000 tithing 2-3% per a household. What does that number look like? So you can kind of just do these rough estimates, you know, whether that be $100 per head per a month, or that, you know, 2-3% on your median income in your target area. You're going to begin to kind of get a little bit of a ballpark. Take an average. You are, again, this isn't a perfect science. You're just kind of looking for a ballpark. And that's how you then begin to figure out, based on our growth, here's how much we're going to be bringing in from internal giving. And that will help you shape then that kind of balance of the percentage of external versus internal in that. Again, you can't force these things, right? These are just numbers that help you with planning. Things might shift as you go down the road, but having an idea is really important, because that people who you are asking to partner with you and support you for a couple of years, they want to see that you actually have thought through this. And I know sometimes pastors say, like, oh, money's not my thing. That's not what I've been trained to do. And I know that. I hear that. I think that's that. Yes, our primary call is to preach the word, right? Minister the sacraments. But we also need to be competent when it comes to, you know, as Paul says, managing our own households as well, households well, and having a basic understanding of how finances work. And I think if you're a pastor and you don't understand, you know, how to read a financial sheet, hey, ask your treasurer in your church to teach you that. That this is a very fundamental skill that I truly believe every pastor needs to understand. So if you're not familiar with this, don't just pawn this off on somebody else. Become familiar. Yes, get partners, but become conversant in this, because people who are financially savvy, right, who are running their own businesses, people who are able to actually probably give you the bigger gifts, if they sense that you don't know what you're talking about, they're going to be far, far, far less likely to actually want to actually trust you with their finances, because they're like, hey, this guy doesn't seem to know what he's talking about. Why would I give him resources God has given me to you know, take care of and to steward? Why would I give it to someone who doesn't sound like they really know what they're talking about? So, yeah, I guess that's maybe all I would say on that.
Yeah, that was really good. I think, you know, the context of this really matters too, like whether you're parachuting or if you're starting with a small group, a launch team. And I think, you know, if you do have a launch team of people that are committed, you know, part of the role of the pastor is to really push that. It's like, let's not just do a 2% or 2.5 or 5. Let's have all those on that launch team be committed at 10% and to be all bought in. And that's going to help the projections too. And so this is such a individual church by church type thing, but I think that helps give us just a picture on how we're going to grade this out. So whether you have 10 people per year, and the next year is 20, and then the next year is 40 and 50, you can kind of see how that's going to increase that internal income while the external need is lower and lower. So it's just simple math. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's talk some general things about, you know, the strategy of setting the budget and then fundraising, and, you know, some the things that are going to help us as we maybe share with people. Oftentimes, as we think about missions and raising money, we talk about seed or startup money versus ongoing. We talk about, you know, people, you know, giving commitments. Talk about the need for ongoing and one-time gifts. I mean, it's a huge conversation, but maybe just talk about how that looked like with Trinity. I can talk about what that looked like with us too, but like there are different categories here. Maybe it'd be helpful to dive into those categories.
Yeah. So when you're thinking about raising money, is the difference between commitments and actually money in hand. And those are more, because you could have, man, we have commitments for the next 5 years. We got, you know, $600,000 of commitments, which is wonderful. Praise be to God. But there is going to be this really practical need that you have, is that you have to have the money in the bank before you can actually use it, right? So there has to be some type of seed or startup capital that you have already put into the bank, right? And ideally, you have a pretty significant chunk of that in the bank before you ever even go to the mission field, before you ever even go to, you know, wherever you're planting a church. You have it, you have a chunk of it in the bank. So you can draw upon that as you're going forward, right? And that's maybe the hardest thing, is you do need some people to either be giving for a period of time, you know, it could be a year. People who are committing to monthly gifts, you know, for a whole year before you even get to the mission field, or you are getting several larger gifts, kind of the seed money gifts that are going into the bank that will then be paying your bills as you are moving to the mission field, beginning to gather people and do that outreach and evangelism in the community you're trying to reach. So that what what that actual number that you're going to need, what I would say is, again, there's not going to be this hard and fast rule of how much money do you have to have in the bank. What I generally encourage is you want to have at least your first year, if not really year and a half to 2 years, ideally, but at minimum, your first year needs to be in the bank before you actually make that move to going to the mission field. Mm-hmm. Because you need it, you know, especially if you're a pastor, married, you got kids, your call, your first and primary call is to your family. It's not to the church, right? It's to your family, to care for your wife, to care for your kids. And if you don't do that, Paul says you're worse than an unbeliever. So again, this kind of goes back to that point of pastor saying, well, I don't really care about finances. Like, well, yeah, you do need to care, because if you don't care for your family and you are foolish in that, you're worse than an unbeliever with that. So yeah, okay, what's it look like? Let's get 1 year's worth of expenditures, right, in the bank, right, that we know we're not going to be out on the street during this first time. And then you need to, what's also really helpful then is to know and ask for not only one-time gifts, but ongoing regular monthly gifts. And in fact, the ongoing gifts are far more helpful as you get going than the one-time mm-hmm. gifts. You go to a church, you do a presentation, you're asking for prayer partners and financial partners. It would be better for someone to say, hey, I'm going to commit to give you $25 a month for the next 3 years, than for someone to say, here's a $500 check. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the reason for that, one, is there's actually a compounding effect to it. But two, now you actually know what income you can count on if they have told you how much they're going to be giving you. Okay. And one of the things that we did for this, and a lot of books on this, you know, very common, a lot of ministries out there like Navigators and Campus Crusade or Crew, who do a lot of like campus ministry. I mean, they have spent a lot of time thinking about this and working through, you know, what are some of the best ways to raise, supporters, prayer and finances, a lot of great resources there. But getting people to pray about what they want their commitment to look like, so that it's not just this impulsive, hey, here's a $25 check, but getting them to pray about it and then letting you know, here's my commitment. And this can be prayer cards. We did this with prayer cards. We did this also with on our website, where people could say, I'm committing to give for this many years. It could be the option, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, checkbox it, and then committing to giving this much a month. Mm. And if their finances change, of course, like we're that's not a big deal, right? We all understand that. I can't afford it anymore. Okay, great. Right. This is a faith kind of commitment you're making. So for someone to say, I'm going to give for 5 years, $20 a month, you're receiving that information. And now you can begin making your projections as you're in that fundraising process of how much more you need to raise. So you can report to people, hey, we have this much committed for our first 3 years. Praise be to God. Here's how much we still need. And that is that people want to know that, because they don't want you to be overfunded. Right. And they don't want you to be way underfunded. So to be able to communicate that in a very just kind of honest, clear way is very, very helpful for that. What would you add to that?
Yeah. I was thinking, as you talk about the ongoing and one-time gifts, if our goal is to raise people and partners, it's going to be a whole lot easier to raise continual partners in the ministry if they are continually giving. It is like you said, it's really easy just to quickly write a check. And maybe that person doesn't think about you in the next year, you know, but the idea of this ongoing thing where they're going to feel it, they're mm-hmm. going to see it, that's partnership. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, another aspect of this is, I remember when we raised money to go to Ukraine, diversification. And we were constantly told, go wide, you know, big net of people, because people drop out. And if you have, just like investments, right? If all your eggs are tied to one or two baskets and you lose one of those, you're in major trouble. And so you want to have a ton of people, a ton of congregations that, in case things change, and they will, you're able to handle that. Interesting story, a missionary friend of mine that we've supported for a number of years, good friend of mine, and I don't think we even support him that much, is maybe like $25 a month. And a number of things changed this last year and we stopped. And I kind of got some guilt calls and texts because I think it was that important, just $25 a month. Well, that screams to me that he probably wasn't diversified as much in his platform. And so I think as we go out to raise people, we don't want to just do a few people or be satisfied if we've got, oh, I got two churches and five people. Well, things change. You referenced that. And so just the call to go out. And again, if it's built into the bigger strategy of teaching people about missions and getting people excited about how they fit into the mission of God and teaching people about stewardship and all these aspects, we should want to go out and cast a wide net for this. Maybe one more thing to add to that is make it easy. And you talked about prayer cards and really, really good. I think we want to direct people to get connected to online giving. Just because at the end of the day, you aren't going to forget it. And there's a ton of statistics out there on how, you know, it's just setting up online giving is just going to be the most consistent and helpful for stewardship, but also then for budgeting and everything else. And so as we talk about communication resources, which we did a couple weeks ago, having that clear online giving through your website is very, very important just to make it simple. You don't want to make this hard for people. Anything else?
Yeah, no, I mean, I know we're kind of going high level here. So, okay, we've talked about you need to know how much you're trying to raise. So like, what is your need? You know, again, last episode, what's your budget? How do you set that? So how much you need to raise? Okay, internal, external. Where is that coming from? We talked about some of that. You need to have tools to communicate that. That's website, pamphlets, prayer cards. You know, it could be a YouTube video. You have a short 5-minute YouTube video, kind of sharing the vision of it. There's a lot of, you know, tools that could be out there, you know, PowerPoint slides that you're using. But you need to develop those tools to communicate what you're trying to raise, how much you have raised, and how people can partner with you. Okay, so what's the next step? So, okay, we got an idea of how much we need to raise. We have a couple of the tools developed. Now what?
Yeah, I think it's as simple as starting to identify who we're going to contact. Okay, so there are four categories in this. We've already kind of talked about it, but the idea of you know, your parent church, congregations, friends, and family. And I would say is get really practical on this and make a list under each one. And so I know for us, when we used to do this for congregations, I remember just literally looking at states and getting on our AFLC website and say, okay, these are all congregations that I have a connection with. Maybe it's a former Bible school student. Maybe it's a friend. Maybe it's a family. Maybe it's another pastor that I know. Or maybe it's a congregation someone has told me about that is mission-minded. And I literally will write down, you know, 50 congregations. Same thing with my friends. I'm going to write a list with everybody that I want to approach to partner with me or family. And so you're going to have this massive list, frankly, of congregations, friends, and family that you're going to then go off of and make that contact. So you have to have a list. That's part of your strategy. And there's a lot of ways you can do that, but that you can need the list. And then the next step, you start making appointments. You call, right? You make an appointment, and then you just start attending these appointments. And this could be over the course of a month, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 months, depending on what your runway is. This is hard, right? This is the part where oftentimes people don't like this because you have to actually have to go out and sit in a living room or go to a church and talk to people about the ministry. It takes a lot of guts. It takes prayer. It takes faith-filled courage in the Lord and how he provides for us in every way. But it's a very personal thing. Again, your goal is to raise partners. So you want to be face to face. You know, sometimes that's not always possible. Sometimes you'll send letters. Sometimes you'll do it on the phone. But face to face is the best. Matt, you said it earlier, the phrase, the biggest gifts come from the smallest room, the smallest audience. It's that conversation over a cup of coffee at a coffee shop or in a living room in a house with people where you can actually just really share face-to-face, the ministry, the opportunity. You know, depending on how long your runway is, there's only so many Sundays. And so I know for me, I would try to be very strategic. If I had a list of 50 churches, I would break it down to, okay, these are probably my top 10 congregations that I think are most likely to support me. And so then I would schedule those congregations on Sundays. And then maybe the next level of, okay, I have pretty good contacts here, and I've heard they're really mission-minded. Maybe I'll try to schedule a Wednesday night or something. And so I was just trying to figure out, like, how do I how do I plan and leverage my Sundays mm-hmm. and my weekdays to be the most effective? And looking back, I think maybe I did as best as I could. Ironically, some of the churches that I spoke at on random nights were better partners with us than churches that I thought were going to be amazing on Sundays. And so it's just kind of really interesting. But you do your best and you try to think and pray through it, and you try to leverage those high-level moments in congregations. Marty mentioned sending letters, just information. So Matt, after you make the contacts and then you go out and you have all these meetings, you attend these appointments, talk about follow-up. What do you do next?
Well, yeah, follow-up. One, I want to add one thing on that. Mm-hmm. You mentioned this, but the prioritizing your contact list. And I love that. And that idea of, well, who are the ones who most likely to support? Those are people who have a heart for ministry. They know you, right? We did this with our South Dakota district, going from Abiding, because we had support from Abiding, but we had our whole district that supported us, a tremendous amount of support from the local congregation. So we really targeted traveling around to those congregations, sharing the vision, inviting them to partner. But then also, I didn't really know a lot of the churches down here in Texas. But we said, well, hey, this is going to be right in their district. Let's come down here. And I actually made a whole, you know, multiple vision trips down here and visited with the different congregations around Texas and shared the vision as well. So that was also a neat kind of just way to say, here are some high value individuals who are highly invested in us as a family, right? They know us, we're a known entity, or invested in wanting to see another, you know, AFLC church planted in this area. Mm-hmm. So you do have to prioritize your list, because you can't reach you can't sit down with every single person and do that. So anyway, this is kind of a little story on the importance of doing that. So yeah, you have then made the list, you've done these appointments, hard work, you got to do it. You make yourself every week say, I'm going to reach out to five people and ask them, and here was always my thing, hey, you know, so and so, as you know, the Lord's, you know, Abiding sending us to plant a church in San Antonio. The Lord's calling us to plant a church there. I would love to have an opportunity to sit down with you and your wife and share, invite you to consider becoming a prayer partner and possibly, God willing, a financial partner. And I would love to sit down and share some of the opportunities with you. Every time I did that, I never had a person say no. Every person said yes. And I, you know, you're so nervous. You go to their house. You know, I had a whole PowerPoint presentation on my computer. Keep it short, right? People's time is valuable. Keep it, you know, 15 minutes. Be ready to answer their questions, right? Leave them information. And at the end of it, just have a really clear ask, okay? So that's really just practical. You have to do that hard work. It is hard. It's difficult. It's gut-wrenching, but you got to do it. And when you do it, there's so much blessings that come both to them and to the other folks. Okay, so once you've done that, and they say, yes, we prayed about it, we want to commit to partnering, it's, you have to now stay in communication with them. That is, you know, an immediate thank you, obviously. Really appreciate your support. Writing a thank you letter. Our goal was always at least once a year, our first couple of years, writing a handwritten thank you letter, making sure they are getting a monthly update. Our first couple of years, that was a big thing, is sharing, here is where your resources are going, right? Here are the stories of what God is doing here in our midst. Here are stories of life change or the gospel being shared. And here are prayer requests of how you can continue to be praying about God working here. So that staying in touch is just really, really important. Your mother church, I think if you are in a unique situation where you do have a mother church who is maybe supporting you in a more significant way, you especially want to make sure you are staying in communication with that church, right? And getting back and sharing with the leadership and with the pastor and the congregation what God is doing in your midst. So ongoing communication, I mean, there's a lot of different ways that looks. Don't just receive a gift and then drop off and don't ever talk about it, right? That's kind of, I guess, the principle there. So not difficult at all, but it does take intentionality. And if you're a planter, you have to put it on your calendar. You sit down because you're crazy busy. You feel like you don't have time to do that, but you have to prioritize sharing updates on what God is doing in your midst.
Yeah, really good. All right, let's shift gears here a little bit. We've been talking about it from the perspective of the planter or the missionary who goes out. Let's put ourselves in the seat of the person that we're trying to talk to. And it's a healthy exercise to just ask the question, well, what are they looking for? What do they actually want? We all support different things, whether we get to our church, whether we support missionaries. And there's certain expectations that we have. And there are things that we would like to have or want that give us confidence in wanting to support a ministry or a congregation, things like that. So let's talk about that for a few minutes as we kind of wrap up today. But what do our partners want? And so let's just, Matt, we got a list here. Let's just kind of walk through these relatively quick because we already talked about some of them. But let's just start. Yeah, that was really good. You know, just again, as we've had two episodes just on the reality of money and budgeting and all those things. And the reason why we want to talk about this is because it's so important. We've seen churches that start and because they don't raise enough support, they just go away. And we don't want that. We want to set up congregations for the best chance of success. And finances is a big part of it. And so it's important to really think through it and plan for it and learn from others. There are so many good resources out there. A couple books that we've used, People Raising by William Dolan. That's one that we both used. One you mentioned earlier was The Spirituality of Fundraising from Henry Nouwen. Again, there's a lot of other good things in there. You referenced Campus Crusade and Navigator. So many ministries, nonprofits that have done this. Learn from people. It's not rocket science, and yet it is an art. And yet, as we go through all this, as you've said earlier, as God has called you to do this, he's going to provide. So while this is, you know, the nitty gritty and there's a plan and a process, we can also rest in the knowledge that, you know, God's going to provide, and we can trust him in that way as well. So hopefully this has been a good episode for you, a learning opportunity to grow and think through finances more in raising people. So thanks for joining us today. If this show is good for you, and I would encourage you to share with others that might be encouraged by it. If you're interested in exploring church planting, love to hear from you. Contact us at aflchomemissions.org. Thanks.